Okay, well, maybe we'll make a start. There'll probably be some people still wander in. But thank you for coming. My name's Rob Hopkins, and the idea of this workshop is to introduce you to some work that we've been doing at the Transition Network for the past few months, which we're really excited about. And so the aim of today really is to introduce it to you and explain it in more detail, is to get a chance to get your thoughts on it in various ways as well. Because the great thing about this pattern language approach is it's something that can be very much fed into, and we'd like it to be really rich in terms of representing what's happening out there in the transition world. Okay. Do you want to maybe come and sit in the front row? Because we don't have an amplifying microphone.
Right, sorry,
actually, that's just a recording device.
No, recording.
But if you want to come and sit a bit closer, maybe you can sit here.
Rob, is it okay to close the door? Because we've got some music downstairs.
Yeah, that's fine. As Duncan was just saying, the windows in this room probably haven't opened since about 1983. So hopefully we aren't just going to gently marinade over the next hour and a half, but we'll try and there'll be at the end we go out of here anyway, and we'll go down into the corridor. So I wanted to just start by giving a little bit of history, I suppose, in terms of going back about where the 12-step way that we talk about transition came from. So quite early on in the life of Transition Town.Ness, Naresh and myself just started showing some films around the town and doing some talks, and that ran like that for about 8 months before we even thought about calling it Transition Town.Ness. So it was just the two of us showing films, meeting other people who bought different parts of the puzzle, like Sophie and Hilary, and people who came from other backgrounds and other disciplines and who seemed to have bits of the jigsaw puzzle that just fitted in absolutely perfectly. And then in 2006, in September, then we had the Unleashing event, which seemed like a good thing to call it at the time. And then that was something which, shortly after that, then people from Lewis and Falmouth and a few other places came along, and Brixton came along and started saying, what are you doing and how does that work exactly? You know, what is this thing that you're doing that you're calling transition? And Ben was putting the primer together, the transition primer, which most of you will have seen. So the 12 steps was an attempt at that point to try and identify what it was that we were doing. And at that time, we were also very much looking at the links between addiction and transition. So the fact that there seemed to be 12 of these things, whatever they were, felt quite handy in terms of making that addiction sort of point as well. But then quite soon after that, then when Naresh and Sophie were developing the training, they started saying, well, they're not really all steps, are they, actually? Actually, some of them are steps, and some of them are actually tools, and some of them are more sort of thinking approaches, I suppose. So then they started calling them the 12 ingredients. And then so in the training, it's referred to as the 12 ingredients, the last one of which is to create an energy descent action plan. So then Totnes, a month or so ago, got to the stage of actually producing its energy descent action plan. So strictly speaking, Totnes is actually finished now. And we can all just pack up and go home. And wasn't that fun? But of course it doesn't actually work like that, because actually we were only just getting started, really, in effect. So then there was some discussion on transition culture a while ago about what step 13 might look like, and saying, well, maybe step 13 is around social enterprise and how you actually create livelihoods to underpin this business. And then you start saying, well, yeah, but then what's step 14? Then it all just gets ridiculous at that point. And so the idea is to come up with a different approach and a different model which actually communicates what transition has become much, much better. Because I think there's lots of things in the transition model which have always been implicit but not made explicit. And also I think that what transition does, what the 12 steps does, is it sets out how transition initiatives can get started and get moving along. And lots of people really like that sort of first you do this, then you do this, then you do this kind of tool. But what would be really useful, what I wanted to do just to start, was to get you into groups of about four and to just chat for about 10 minutes about what your experience has been of using that 12-step approach. What are its strengths, and what, having been working with it for the last couple of years, what you found to be its weaknesses as well? Yeah? And then we'll just feedback some of that. So if you can pull out maybe two or three strengths and two or three weaknesses based on your practical use of it over the last few years. Is that okay? So we'll, yeah, for about 10 minutes, and then I'll call you back together. So groups of four or five people. Oh, yes. Oh, just one second. Can I just have your attention one second?
I'm Paris. I'm Britain.
Someone has just asked me, the hideous, hideous question that I get asked in interviews sometimes, and it's always really embarrassing. What are the 12 steps? So maybe you can help me out here. I'm going to try and see if I can remember them. Former steering group, initiating group. Awareness raising. Sort of laying the foundations.
Good idea.
Former steering group. So former steering group. This is a sort of transition version of a pub quiz now. So if you see how well you've been paying attention over the last 4 years. Number two.
Do we have to get them in order?
Yeah, you have to get them in order. This is me getting out of a very tight hole here. Sorry?
Awareness raising.
Laying the foundations. The great unleashing, very good.
Do you know the full working group?
You don't know.
Oh,
then
you can't get up to Number 9 is Form of Rich Togetherness. That's the one I remember. Yeah. Number 9.
Working groups.
11 is where, let it go where it wants to go.
9 is Form
of Rich. Interesting how people have their favourites.
Yeah, Form Working Groups.
Using open space.
Yeah, using open space, is that number 6? Number 6?
Reskilling, is it?
9 is form of rich together.
This is a very interesting exercise, isn't it?
Yeah.
10 is energy
to 11 is let it go where it wants to go.
There's two gaps here, folks. Come on. Visible manipulation.
Reskilling.
Oh, the great reskilling. Very good.
Can you read them out?
They're not quite maybe in the exact Church of England prescribed. Okay. Number 1, former steering group. Number 2, awareness raising. Number 3, lay foundations. Number 4, a great unleashing. Number 5, form working groups. Number 6, open space and stuff like that. 7, visible manifestations. 8, the great reskilling. 9, form a bridge to government. 10, honour the elders. 11, let it go where it wants to go. And 12, create an energy descent action plan. All right? Go. Useful or not? Discuss. Okay. Thank you. So maybe we could just start with any things. So start with what was good about. What's been good about the 12 steps? What have you found useful about it?
It's good to give a start.
Okay. Okay. So it's good for some initial guidance and to get started.
And it's easy.
Yeah.
That's something to aim for as well.
Okay. So you can see where you start and you can see where you move forward to.
Some targets.
Yeah, so you have targets to aim at. Anything else?
It is flexible so that as a list of ingredients, it can work for the people that want a set of steps, and it can work for the people who go, but I want to do this too.
Yes. Okay. Okay, thank you.
I think it's easy to relate to just the fact that it's 12 steps and people recognise that as something that
is easier. Okay, great.
It's just shared language, isn't it, from the start? You can Google it, you can find out who else is having a teaching and build from there.
Yeah.
It's not too overwhelming because you think, okay, step 1 to 5, we can cope with that, we can leave local government for now, give you permission to not do it all at once.
Okay, great.
But some of the ingredients are things that we wouldn't necessarily have thought of for ourselves, like the government thing.
Okay.
And on that point, I think those ingredients, they are locally and regionally actually very different, and they need different amounts and different times to be put into the pot.
Yeah.
It's a different recipe in every place.
Yeah.
Which isn't always clear to people, I think.
Yeah. And in terms of what doesn't work so well about them, or what you've struggled with them, or
people think it's just the rules that you have to do in that order, and if you don't do the order, you're doing it wrong, and so it won't let you, do certain things until you've done. We have big disagreements. People thought we're not allowed to do any projects because we've not unleashed yet, and
yes,
people might disagree with that, and big arguments because that is the rules as you said it, and like we have to obey.
It's really interesting that actually. So seeing that how even though it says everywhere, there's not, don't go through it one by one, and it's a set of suggestions. How many people do get very fixed to it being a rigid kind of a thing?
If someone in the student group tries to argue, people say, "Do you think you know more than Rob Hopkins?"
Almost certainly.
It's a great weapon. I'm not sure that it's in the positive side, but people use it as a fantastic weapon for fighting each other. There's different ways you can use it. It's that you can use it how you're either following the rules and being good, or equally you've read more and it's not rules to follow. So it's a fantastic source of conflict.
Okay.
I think it's missing. This aspect of actually sort of motivating and activating people. I think we in Rochester have been through most of those, but we're still missing an awful lot of people who will come up and contribute their energy to it. And I think somewhere in that is missing.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you.
And there's also sometimes a sense that if it doesn't work out like that you've failed.
So
ours hasn't worked out like that. Like, our working groups thing is, people have just gone off and done their own thing and it doesn't have transition on the label.
Mm.
And then we're going, oh no, we've done it wrong. And that as well.
Yeah.
It would have been much better, say, as a bunch of patterns.
I think you might be onto something there. Yeah.
I think the difficulty came with the beginning of the core group and it having to dissolve, because I'm in two different initiatives, and one core group hasn't dissolved, and one core group sort of just became, everybody became a core group. So there was a lot of confusion around that.
Yeah.
A lot of hierarchy in parish was set up because of it.
Yeah.
I don't know what other initiatives and experience.
David?
I suppose we're a movement based on whole systems and self-organisations. To have 12 steps or a rigid sort of framework doesn't really match your movement.
To use a linear model to describe a systems approach, yeah. Tully?
We were talking in our group about the difficulties we've been experiencing. Most of us come from cities of different sizes, and the difficulty really of creating a foundation group in a city, because it's an initiative in a city. And I was talking about the approach we've taken in knowledge with transition circles, which are not in the 12 steps, really, is a different focus, or about a local subgroup of the initiative.
Great.
Yeah, I was going to add, in cities, I'm really don't think the 12 steps are a good model. My experience in Bristol, it just hasn't worked remotely like that.
Okay.
I'm not one for following rules very rigidly.
But I actually used it very rigidly when I was working with a council in South Australia, about 30,000 people in the community. And I wanted to keep the council away from the community, to let the community build up some strength and competence and so on. And they're still not ready yet, and so on. But it was quite hard keeping the council away, but I used that. Step 9, you can't do it until then. And they bought it for 2 years. And now I don't work there anymore.
Thank you. Yeah.
Ever if I get a find that the heart and soul aspect often isn't there, I mean, they can bring it back in and maybe having that more positive in the model, I guess something to follow.
Yeah, yeah.
Could have encouraged more of that.
I think in Brighton we've had kind of tensions between senses of urgency. Like some people want to go straight to the Energy Descent Action Plan because, you know, it's really urgent that we do this.
Yeah.
But and other people kind of, no, we need to go through these stages so that, you know, we have the whole kind of community on board. And I think it's really good that it's quite a slow thing.
Mm-hmm.
But other people have thought that, you know, we need to go straight to the action that's going to work.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
What we did is we created a jigsaw with the physical jigsaw to use to explain how we can do transition with the transition group in the middle and then projects coming out and then another layer coming out of social enterprises coming out and blank pieces of the jigsaw as well, so that when we talk about it, people can say, well, I think we could have put this here, and people can make the jigsaw in any way they want and start in anywhere and join anything together, and we've sort of been using that as a way of trying to explain how to do transition,
okay.
Which seems to sort of, for us, work a bit better really than a rigid linear.
Yeah. Thank you.
And we certainly had one person that was using, expressed some concern about the association with addiction, and think both quite vocal about it. We haven't seen any concern since then, but I do wonder for people perhaps who have other addictions, whether to be told they've got another one. It's an important association, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe have we built it in to the right sense?
Yeah, good point. Okay. Okay, last one.
Yeah, I suppose I was interested in your alluding to the 12 steps, the sort of addiction recovery process as some sort of association with this. And I suppose, you know, if you're using a sort of addiction model, what feels a little bit missing is the kind of spiritual dimension of the 12 step recovery, which is a core part of the 12 step.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for that. I think my sense has been that really over the last 4 years, as transition has grown very, very quickly and other things have come into bear, and we've seen the kind of experience of it in the cities and in the towns of people trying different things out, that it's become that actually we need a different way of doing it. And so at this point I want to introduce you to this book. Which, when I did my permaculture course in 1992, this was sort of handed to us like some sort of religious text. And I think that, along with the collected works of Captain Beefheart, this is one of the few things from the 20th century worthy of being called genius. And so Christopher Alexander and his colleagues worked in university in Berkeley, architecture school. And they set out, it was a very sort of progressive college, and they set out to try and pin down what it was that made built environments so beautiful and so empowering that people kind of came alive in them. What made communities really thrive in particular built environments, and what it was about other built environments that made everyone just want to run out and stab each other, and why it is when you walk in Siena you feel fantastic and when you walk in Slough you feel wretched. And so they identified a series of what they called patterns, and I can just read a couple little bits out of here when he describes what a pattern is. The elements of this language, so yeah, they say that any built environment is composed of elements in the same way that the language is. So in the same way that you can use the English language to write Shakespeare or to write a Geoffrey Archer novel, the same way you can use patterns around built environment to design beautiful spaces or life-destroying places. The elements of this language are entities called patterns. Each pattern describes a problem that occurs over and over again in our environment, and then describes the core of the solution to that problem in such a way that you can use this solution a million times over without doing it ever the same way twice. And so what I loved about this is when you pick it up, it looks like an enormous sort of impenetrable book. And they had this 300 and something patterns throughout the book. And they go from the scale of where you site a new city in a landscape down through how you lay that town or city out, down through how you set out the roads, how you design the streets, down to individual houses, how you lay them out, down to stuff like textures and window shapes and corridors. And there's so many things when you go through it that are things that you've kind of that you haven't quite been able to put your finger on, but you go, I see, that's really clever. And each pattern is laid out in a very, very simple way. What's brilliant about it is that it's like the internet before the internet, that it's kind of full of hyperlinks. So wherever you land, if you decide you want to design a kitchen, for example, you go to the pattern about kitchens, and you immediately get a sense of where that sits in the whole network of things. So it tells you this pattern about designing a kitchen sits in the wider context of you looking at this, 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 and this. And when you're looking at this, you need to be bearing in mind this, 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 and this. So it's kind of hyperlinks in the 1970s version thereof. So there's another bit I was going to read as well. So he says, in short, no pattern is an isolated entity. Each pattern can exist in the world only to the extent that it is supported by other patterns. The larger patterns in which it is embedded, the patterns of the same size that surround it, and the smaller patterns which are embedded in it. So what he does in pattern language is he starts from the huge scale and goes down to the small scale, which didn't really quite seem to work in terms of looking at transition, because transition starts on the small scale and then grows outwards. So in the booklet that you've got, have you all got a copy of your book, your conference booklet? Is there anyone who hasn't got one here? So we've got a few spare ones. Everybody else got one? So because it started to feel to me like actually what had happened was that the 12 steps became something that there was a perception that had been that a man with a long white beard had channeled on top of Totnes Castle and carried down on big slabs of stone, and they were somehow irreplaceable. And actually, the more that we've worked on this as a different way of doing it, the more it feels much, much more useful and much more usable. And an important point to make as well is that the last thing that I want to do is to bring a whole new sort of tier of jargon into everything. And so everyone's going to think, pattern? What's pattern? And so actually what we're looking at here is how this would is this idea of pattern language and how it works. But in the final thing, how it's presented, we won't use the term pattern language. So that'll be tucked away in some appendix at the back or something. But it'll be a model that people will be able to use. If they want to find out where it's come from, that'll be there. So hopefully it'll feel very usable and workable.
So presumably you still need a language, you still need a word to describe what these things are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why take pattern out? Actually?
Well, maybe to use, I don't know. Yeah, I suppose the thing was, so maybe we'd call them patterns. But not then have a whole big thing about what pattern language is. That actually, the thing is, if it's well enough presented and well enough laid out and designed, you should just be able to find your way around it without having to have a whole big discussion about what it is, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But that's at the back if people want it. But if you look on page 7, what we tried to do was to think, well, what are the stages that groups go through? You know, if Alexander in his book talks about how you start in the towns, that scale of where you put a settlement and then you work down, you know, can we identify stages that groups go through? And the ones that seem fairly universal from talking to different people was the first one of where we start from, you know, going back from actually starting the initiative and saying, well, what are the qualities, the tools, the resources that people who are thinking of starting a transition initiative would find really, really handy to have cultivated or worked on, which you don't see in many books on this kind of thing, but actually felt like a really useful thing to look at, to explore.
And then the next one is getting started. So that's that first stage of people meeting in a pub and saying, hey, why don't we start doing a transition initiative? So what happens? What's that first stage of picking up on that on that initial pulse of doing it? The third ones are about ongoing and deepening. So you've got going, you've run some films, you feel you've got some kind of a momentum going. How do you then turn that into being an organisation, something that can actually move forward and actually becomes more sort of sound in that way? And the fourth one is patterns for outreach. How do you then start to really broaden out and go out into other organisations, deepen the engagement? What are the ingredients of that? The fifth one is patterns for implementing transition infrastructure, because that's the bit that feels to me like actually when transition starts to become quite distinct as an approach, that it's not just about starting lots of kind of local food projects and energy things, that ultimately it's about looking at the practical elements of the relocalization of that settlement. So thinking strategically about how we actually do that. So that's that. And the sixth ones are virtually entirely speculative, but it's starting to look at where might all this go if, say, in Somerset, every town in Somerset has a very active, very vibrant transition project, and they've got big projects underway, they've all set up their own energy companies, and they've got local food systems going, they start to actually become quite a potent political force at that stage. So what does that look like? How does that then start to interact with government? What does it look like when transition becomes something that is really looked at in that way? So the idea has been to base it on those six steps. you can take the man out of the steps. Rules, yeah. Commandments, I think. So if you then go to page 40, we did one pattern in full, just to give you a sense of how this works. Okay, so first of all, you've got the name, you've got the title. So we've tried to do it so that the title of each pattern is something quite snappy, quite memorable. And then you've got the stars. So there's three stars, two stars, one stars, or no stars after that. So three stars means this definitely works. This is something that there's a good kind of evidence base for this. There's a good experience. We can put our hands on our heart and say, this is a strategy that will be effective. Two stars means it's pretty much that's the case, but it's not completely there. And step one is, what one star is... One star is that it's more speculative. You know, this is something that's kind of work in progress and that we don't quite know yet, which feels really important, I think, that actually there are things that we're doing in transition that are well tried and tested, and there's other things that we're just really winging and we really have no idea. And that whole kind of spirit of celebrating failure and trying it, you know, getting away from being so risk averse, but actually I think it's really important that where there are things that we don't know, that we're actually straight up about that. And then there's a photo, and in pattern language itself, the photos are absolutely exquisite. I don't know where they got them all from, but the idea is that those photos really communicate somehow the essence of that pattern. So the photos are really important. So one of the things that I'd really like, and we'll talk about this a bit more later, but in terms of input from you and from the wider transition movement is when you read a pattern, you think, oh, I've got a picture that really, really, from what we've been doing, that really gets that much better than the rubbish one Hopkins has put in there. Send me the pictures, because we really want the pictures to, firstly, to capture the essence of those patterns, but also really to capture what's happening around the world in terms of what transition groups are doing. Okay, so then you have this first bit here, which sets out what are the larger patterns that this one sits within. So the patterns that it refers to are in bold. So for every pattern, you can just come to it straight away, and you get a sense of where it sits in the bigger picture. It's very kind of fractal in that way. And then you have the bit in bold, which is the problem. So what's the problem that this pattern is setting out to try and address? So with the ones that we've done so far, we did a lot of work on trying to say, well, are these problems? How do you define the problem that this is seeking to address? Because one could come up with all kinds of different things. So what we're going to do at the end of this session is we're going to go out into the corridor where all the patterns are up, and invite you to have a think if there are ones that are missing. But if there are, the question is really, what is the problem that this pattern sets out to address? Yes?
I have a small objection.
Yes.
And rather a large objection to the picture you've chosen to illustrate standing up to speak. But in my experience, it's actually women who are far more likely to stand up to speak.
Yeah.
This man, actually, I don't know who he is, but he actually looks, by his dress and his start, he actually looks like a council member. and that's my response.
Yeah, yeah, good. Thank you.
I try to ignore the picture, just read the text.
Good, yeah, okay.
It's in conversation, watch text.
Okay.
In my view.
Okay. He's someone from Transition Nottingham, but but yeah, no, absolutely, and like I said, this is being very much presented as work in progress and as a draft, and send us some other pictures.
I'm
yes.
Glad you said that, by the way, because I completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going back to what you just said about that, if we think that a pattern is missing, we should think about what problem it's trying to solve.
Yeah.
Maybe it's. My understanding of patterns is different, but how it tends to work in my industry in user interface design is that we tend to
user interface
design, like websites and software and stuff, is we tend to develop patterns by looking at what people have done, what solutions people have come up with, and seeing what works, you know, several times in several different case studies, and then kind of abstracting that into a solution and then describing when that solution is used. So it's you come up with the same thing, but it's slightly different methodology
okay.
to what you just said. I don't know if that's maybe a better way to come at it.
Well, that was there's certainly one of the patterns in here which is about cakes. Mm-hmm. Which is 2.15, which is about cakes, which is one of those things of just noting something that seems to be happening repeatedly. You know, why is it that often when transition initiatives have some big event, some big occasion, somebody makes an absolutely stunning cake? You know, well, why is that? What's that all about? And it seems to happen often enough that it does. There feels to be some sort of pattern there. So yeah, there's different ways you can come at it. Yeah. And then you have the main text of it, which is the main. Yes.
Something sort of emerging in my brain. I think one of the sort of the USPs of transition is that it's a resolutely positive movement. And it's not contained anywhere in the steps other than in the EDAP, where you vision, plan, and pioneer the new future. And I think it's such a powerful tool and such a powerful process that keeps us positive, moving towards a destination rather than fighting against the disaster, that it actually needs to be a pattern.
Mm.
It needs to be that we stay positive and we vision and we that is what energises.
Great. Well, we'll come on to that in a minute. So
can we let Rob finish doing the pattern, because I think we need to understand it before we make our comments.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Rob, when you go through the pattern, could you also relate it to page 29, where you've actually got the format of the thing?
Yeah. Well, that's yeah. Yeah, I mean, so basically, what I'm saying is, I'm going through what's on page 29 and. So page 29 is a written version of explaining each element, which is about based on this pattern here. So then the main text is really is going to be the hardest part of it, I think, is to really try and to distill down into a couple of pages the richness of actually what's happening. And what I really want to do there is to tell that story using stories from across transition initiatives. So what's been working, what's not been working, projects people have done, anecdotes, stories. So that's part of what the invitation will be later on as well, is where if you look at a pattern, you think, oh yeah, we did a really great training on teaching people how to speak, and we did this and we did that, or this tool was really, really useful, or so-and-so came along to our initiative and they'd never done any public speaking, and when we held our unleashing, we made sure that every link between different speakers, somebody else, somebody different from the group got up and stood up and spoke. So by the end of it, 8 people who'd never done public speaking all got an opportunity to speak. Those are the stories that really need to populate that. So there'll be lots of references at the back where that's come from, but that's going to be the thing that makes it really, really rich, I think. And then you've got the solution, which is in bold as well. And then at the end, then you have the smaller things that you need to think about, the elements that you need to think about in terms of making that happen. So when you pick up the great house brick that is pattern language, I took it home when it was lent to me, and you can read the whole book in a few hours, just looking at the pictures and reading the bold bits. And so that's the beauty of it, is that it's very kind of accessible. You can fly through it, and then the ones you want to go back to, you can then return to. So what as well feels to me, one of the things that's different between a pattern language way of talking about transition and the 12 steps, is that if you're not a transition initiative, but if you're a business or a social enterprise or a local authority, you were saying about how a local authority can look at that model and go, well, we can't do anything till step 9. Actually, in permaculture speak, the transition model, the pattern language model has much more edge. So there's much more ways in which other organisations can look at it and see where they can interact with transition, which feels really, really useful as well. Is that completely bewildering or is that illuminating? Is that useful? Yeah? Yeah.
And in the patterns so far, there are no values explicit.
Yes.
And I wondered if that's something to consider, that there needs to be. I mean, even my experience this morning about talking about the photograph, should we be as judgmental as we are? Mm. You know, people are doing what they're doing. And, I just feel that's part of the essence of the transition. Are we using that?
I think this. I mean, my sense is, and I haven't sat down to do it yet, but my sense is that actually when the second edition of the handbook is created, which has the pattern language as the bulk of the book, that there'll still be that sort of preamble in terms of what transition is and resilience and relocalization, arguing that case. So there'll be those kind of principles set out in advance, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
But 1.0 is the critical question all communities are struggling with, or seeking to overcome, is the attacking climate change, peak oil, and the financial burden. Is that actually setting that out as the first pattern? Hmm. That kind of set of things.
Yeah, it could be. Tully?
Well, yes, I was thinking, you were saying that in the book, pattern language, there are rules for where you put the city, and then all the different things that are. But it sounds like some of the kind of ethos stuff is almost like where you put the city. You know, the stuff about, as well as out of change and so on, is really fundamental principle. Mm.
It feels slightly like a book isn't quite the right way to kind of put this across, being that it's a kind of linear thing. But is there going to be another way of accessing it?
Yeah, they will. Yeah. Well, we're talking about that with Ed at the moment, how that would all work.
Duncan. I'd just like to respond to what Duncan said, because I do agree with your views on the positivity and whatnot. And in fact, there is a kind of branch of holistic nursing science that uses pattern of the person, and I can see how it fits into this, which talks about spirit, values, appreciative inquiry of yourself and your environment, which is that level one thing, and they use pattern, and it's an American thing, and I imagine it comes from that. Mm. It's suddenly connected with me. I thought that's what they're talking about. So I think there is a direct link into the person and the values and the spirit and how that works that we can find.
Mm. Thank you.
This might be something you're about to talk about, but in terms of how these patterns were come to, how they're going to be maintained and extended.
Okay.
And is this going to be a big community effort? Is there going to be an online resource for these patterns that people can talk about, extend, and
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good question. I mean, it's still very much work in progress. So the process so far was that I locked myself. I think it was on a train journey. I sort of just sat and just tried to work out an initial set of patterns. And then we had 3 or 4 sessions at the network where we've done out in the corridor, I just printed out what we'd done so far, put them up, and then people moved them around and know those go with those. And initially there was just 5 levels, and then we added another one, and then people came up with other ones that should be in there. So this is just where we've got to in time for the conference. But then the idea is this is its first sort of public outing, really, in a sense. And there will be kind of ongoing opportunities to consult on them, to feed into them. And then I think ultimately the idea is to have it online in such a way that people can then add new ones, and it'll be kind of a wiki-style thing, I suppose.
Sorry, can just add your examples, like a wiki approach?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just kind of jumping it up a bit, maybe tap above the idea of the language is being here about the outcomes that we're seeking from transition. And I know, you know, I think we're all seeing it, the idea of bringing, you know, addressing the economic crisis into the approach. I think probably we're doing it directly or indirectly.
Yeah.
But, you know, what point we become explicit about that as being the issue to tackle? Because that potentially has ramifications on the patterns we describe and the language we use. So at some point we need to address that.
Fundamental
question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I respond to that? Because I think it's really important to think about what those outcomes are, and if you really take a look at the whole physical system and what we're taking already, which is way more than the Earth is providing, and how many people there are likely to be, and the fact that we're going to need to share it all with the rest of the planet, from Western cultures to it's worth thinking about the principles which inform, you know, a viable Earth in 100 years' time, I think. And having spent a bit of time working on it, I write at the bottom of all my emails, are you trying to sustain the way you live, or are you trying to live sustainably? And they're two completely different things, and I think most of the world is still trying to sustain the way it is. And if you then look at what we would need to do, I suspect that because the Earth is so damaged, we need to back off and take only what we need and nothing else for the next 100 years until things stabilise a bit, if they do, if we're not already over the edge. And I don't think that, in general, people talk like that. Even when they're doing transition, I don't think they do that. And it's I sort of try and liken it to, imagine some people have kidnapped your kids and they're driving away from you fast and they're accelerating away from you. How are you going to try and intercept them? Are you going to aim at them? Are you going to aim a bit ahead of them? Or are you going to aim miles ahead of them to make absolutely sure you're there? And at the moment, most of us are aiming a little bit ahead, some of us are aiming a little bit behind, but very few people are saying, we will do this no matter what, and we'll go way ahead to make absolutely sure we know it, because if we don't, it's game over. And I don't think those conversations are being held clearly yet. And I'm not sure, because I haven't, you know, I haven't talked to a limited number of people. But I think if you do have those conversations, then you end up with some very interesting principles or even patterns about what the future needs to look like in terms of what happens on a global scale, both in terms of politics and economics. If you change to an economics and needs only, it looks a bit different from what we've got now. And if you change to a politics of only the people who live in a particular place can ever know that place well enough to be appropriate stewards of its ecosystems, then ultimate political authority is local, not state or federal. Well, we don't have that either. And so I think we need to be thinking about those so that we're in the right direction. Sorry, that's a bit of a speech, but and it worries me that we're not projecting that far forward and actually aiming at something. We need to be right, but it's, I think, both need to be considered.
I mean, one of the things that is very much kind of work in progress with this is that I'm aware when I'm writing it that I'm writing a pattern language for transition in the UK, and a lot of the ingredients that I'm pulling in are things that I'm familiar with because they're things that are the same here. So I mean, in Brazil, I mean, how does this that it would feel like actually that there would be a lot that would be common, but that they would need people, it would need to be redesigned for each different place. You know, could you take the pattern language that we've designed for here and do it in the US? You know, I mean, there would be some that would be the same and some that would be different. So that whole side of how it sort of nativizes itself in that sense is going to be really interesting, I think.
So that suggests this is a subset of a larger pattern language that hasn't yet been written.
It was all going so well.
Yes. Well, actually, I think it has been written in lots of other cultures, and it's still
there.
Okay,
fine, but
you know, we are. It's like architecture, isn't it? It's the local building, the local beehives. That's why they look and feel the way they are.
It's like sort of vernacular transition, isn't it? It's quite nice.
So it will. We build everywhere, so we can do this everywhere.
Yeah.
So it will transition.
How?
Yeah, I think a lot of that stuff being brought up, it is answered in the handbook, and what we do, it's in the four recognitions and the four assumptions. I think it cuts from there. And for me, it's the obvious starting point. I'm interested why you start at the 12 steps. It's a kind of like the manual approach. For me, what gets to the bottom of what transition is, and this is what I've found we're doing in Totnes now, when we talk to people within the Totnes community, to get them engaged in the transition. I don't know when it was an intentional decision to drop it, but I've just noticed recently, the last 6 months, we have dropped it. We never talk about the 12 steps anymore. We talk about transition, we talk about the four recognitions, i.e. the assumptions, which directly gets into everything you're saying there, and the principles. And for me, that's the really easy stuff to use in transition. And so I'm a little bit nervous at the moment because I feel like I'm being intellectually stretched, and my initial reaction is to resist that, and I think that is quite common with most people out there. And so really thinking about who is our target audience with all this. So is this for transition practitioners to pick up and give extra breadth and depth to them, to us, then that's great. But for tools that we can take out to people who this is new to, then you know, I'd be really impressed if you come up with anything more simple than what's in those four recognitions. That's where I see myself making new ground fastest with the audience.
Great. Thank you.
What are the four recognitions?
You're going to test me on that one. Life with significantly reduced energy consumption is inevitable, and it's better to plan for it than be taken by surprise. That our communities currently lack the resilience to withstand the shocks that will accompany peak oil, climate change, indebted economic system, whatever you like. We have to act collectively, and we have to act now. And by unleashing the collective genius of those around us, we can design ways of living that are more connected, more fulfilling, and recognise the biological limits of the planet. Something like that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I see this as a really useful tool for Ireland because we're struggling to find our pattern over there. And as you know, there's quite a lot of cultural tension between the UK and Ireland. So at the moment, we've an awful lot of anarchistic transition things doing the wrong thing. So I see starting some sort of a pattern language working group could be a really useful tool to help us define. Or to start designing what you're talking about, design that, you know, because it's a language experiment with
great
finding our own patterns.
Well, I'm aware that there's lots of other questions, but I want to just move on and we can come back to those, and hopefully this will be addressed in the next bit. So, so this was the initial kind of stab at it, and so really what I wanted to do for the next for the last half an hour of the workshop is to put it over to you to sort of start playing around with it and editing it and so on and so on. So as I said before, all of the patterns are all arranged out in the corridor. So when you get out there, you turn left for pattern for the ones 4 through to 6, and right for the one for the first, second, and third ones. And they're all on big sheets of A4, and there's post-its there, and there's also sheets of A4. So the post-its are for if you look at a pattern that's already there, and you think I like this, but I don't like that, I don't like the picture, you know, then make a note. If you think I've got a better picture than that, then write a little bit about it and give me your email address so we can get in touch. If you're looking at the one about an unleashing and you think, oh, actually, we had a great thing at our unleashing. If you've got a story or a project that you think should go in there or an anecdote, please just sort of we'll put it in very briefly and what it is and an email address. And if you think there's whole patterns that are missing, then there's sheets of A4 paper out there. And to try and give some kind of sense of what that would be, and to have a think about which of the different sort of stages of it would come in. But in order to do that, I think it would be maybe if we start with people getting into pairs, and I'm hoping that at this stage most of you have at least been able to have a flick through the booklet that you've had and have got a sense of what's been set out and some of the ones that are there. But to get into pairs and have a think about whether there are things you'd like to put in, whether there should be new ones, and then for the last sort of 15 minutes or so, then we'll go out into the corridor and play. Yeah? Okay.